today, part
3,
the Digital Bath podcast series on what are we into besides music, video games, and movies? Coming up next. And we're back. Guys, we're getting back into it. We talked about wrestling, shit, and ranch last episode.
In that
I
order.
Apologize, but you know what? It was a good time. Chris, you always have such insightful things to say.
I'm watching Jesse Moe on Snapchat. It's 10 out of 10.
Okay.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Wow. Well, guys, you know, let's clink our drinks and we'll get this episode started. Let's do it. Let's fucking do it.
Oh, you're gonna pick up a bottle so you can't clink with me. That's some shit.
Fuck you, Chris. Well,
these are both empty.
Well, yeah, because I already drank them. Jesse, Dakota, what are you guys into, huh? What's your hobbies? What's the shit you like?
What you got, Dakota?
What you got, Jesse?
What you got, Dakota, Jesse?
Well, little known fact, I really like comic books.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, so I have really fallen into the habit in the last year. But when I was younger, we had a place called Walden Books in the mall.
Oh, I remember Walden Books.
Next to KB Toys was kind of close.
Yep.
And then you had...
That's some old people shit.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So a mall was where you went to a building and there was multiple shops and you would find things you wanted there.
Like Stranger Things?
Yeah. Now you find nothing but sad people and haircuts. So anyway, then you also had EB Games there. But anyway, so I went into Walden Books and I was... Gosh, that would have been... I was 9 years old at the time. And this little storyline came out for this character. You may have heard of him. His name's Batman. You guys know who Batman is?
I think I've heard of him.
He's a guy that turns into a bat, I think.
Oh, he turns into a bat?
Yeah, that's Man Bat. You're right.
That's Man Bat.
No. So I grew up watching the Batman animated show. Loved that for a long time. And I had like maybe one or two comic books growing up that people gave me. And I went into Walden Books, and my grandma was getting a haircut at the time, so I had time to kill. And there was this Batman comic, and it had this really striking artwork on it. It looked really cool. Batman looked mean and grizzled, and I was like, oh, that looks really different than the TV show that was out in the 90s. I'm gonna look at this. I opened the book, and there's this beautiful Catwoman on it, and I was like, what? Ladies can look sexy in comics?
That's when Jesse got his first boner.
Probably. 9 years old. It was crazy. It was really small. But
wearing
anyway.
Sweatpants at Walden
Books. Your boner was really small, what?
Yeah, I was 9, okay?
Probably proportional.
Well, yeah.
Let's not talk about children's boners. Moving
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a Walden Books.
And that's why I don't know what Walden Books is.
In
Walden
the corner books of Walden Books.
We'll give you boners.
So,
boner section.
I'm talking about a very big storyline in the early 2000s called Hush, which illustrated by Jim Lee, who is one of the greatest of greats as far as comic art goes.
My favorite artist of all time.
If you've seen like a recent Batman...
It's him and then Alex Ross.
Right. If you've seen like posters and things about Batman, like...
It's Jim Lee.
Yeah, a lot of like the
and Superman.
He did Superman too. The birthday like boys stuff, it's usually Jim Lee art.
Also, real quick, I think sometimes the artists don't get the attention they need out of the comic book world
it depends on who it is.
Right, it depends. But like the super nerds when it comes to comics and
super
stuff like
nuts.
That, definitely give them credit where credit's due. But like a lot of other people who just kind of know who Batman is or they've read the comics here and there, they don't understand that the art really can make a lot of how you feel about it.
Luckily for Jim Lee, he got the credit that he deserves, and he's now the active president of DC, or CEO or president.
Yes. Well, and that goes same with Marvel. Everyone knows Stan Lee, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Stan Lee partnered with tons of people to make those comic books, like
Kirby.
Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, John Romita Sr. So there's tons of people
John Romita. Junior's good too, but
yeah, his son's great too. But Senior was one mm-hmm. of the one of the great greats from back in the 60s, 70s, 80s era. But I picked up that comic book and it didn't seem like a kid's comic book. I read it and at the time I was 9, so there was nuances to it I didn't get, but I knew that there was something more than just the pow bang Adam West kind of Batman right. shit that, you yeah. know, I had seen.
Some George Clooney bullshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Bat nipples.
And that's really what... Bat nipples, bat credit card.
Bat credit card,
never yeah. leave the cave without it.
But that's what really, I think, made me realize at a very young age that comic books could be something more than just a kid's story. Yeah. And it's a reason that, you know, these heroes have lived so long. Like, yeah, a lot of them did kind of start more campy and more childish. Superman obviously was a very one-dimensional character when he arrived.
Since we took an intermission, like a little breaky break, where do you stand on Todd McFarlane?
Todd McFarlane's fucking cool. So what was really interesting about him is he started in Marvel. And he made one of the most infamous comic book covers of all time. He did Amazing Spider-Man 300, which is the issue of Black Suit Spidey on the cover doing his signature pose.
One of the most recreated comic book covers of all time.
Interesting.
And what's funny about that is that was when Venom or the Black Suit was introduced. He hated it because he was finally getting to draw Spider-Man, but it was a black suit. So it was the most basic suit Spider-Man had ever had.
He created the black suit and Venom.
And
he created Venom?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Tom McFarlane created Venom?
Yeah.
No wonder I love Venom. That's amazing.
And he was like, well, and he didn't think anything would happen of it. At the time, they're just making, you know, storylines and comics last forever. And he was like, I want to go back to normal suit Spidey because I can show my skills and show off all the intricate designs of his suit. So he didn't even like black suit Spider-Man. He didn't think that was going to go anywhere.
It lasted so long.
Yeah. And so then he also does work for DC and does a very infamous cover of Batman where he learns how to do the cape, which obviously is going to be influential for Spawn
The long flowing cape,
like super long,
very long. It kind of engulfed the whole cover. That was one of his big first covers he also did. And then finally he said, fuck it, I'm going to make my own comic book company. And that's how Spawn came to be. So, yeah, I love talking to Farland. I think he's a really cool guy. He still loves what he does and is always trying to innovate. So, yeah, he's a super cool dude.
Todd McFarlane, you can directly send him comics and he'll sign them and send them back to you.
Like free?
Yeah.
Is he just fucking cool? Like,
yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love you too.
And he is going to direct the new Spawn movie.
Yes, he is.
All I'm saying is I want to meet that dude. Because that's the kind of people I like.
Want to meet that dad.
Like, I mean, if Ed Boon likes him, he's got to be okay, right?
I don't know. Is Ed Boon a nice guy?
Really? Yeah, he's a pretty nice guy. Pretty cool. I've actually met Ed Boon.
I don't know if he's really a nice guy.
Wait, did you touch Ed Boon?
Yeah, we shook hands and we took pictures.
Let me touch you then.
Yeah, okay. All right. Oh,
already, I've touched the hands.
Three directions, yeah. Anyway, so back to 2002
yeah.
when I was... Walden Books there. I dabbled at that point. I was still really young, so I didn't have my own money really to... buy my own comic books, but every time I went to the mall with my grandma and she got her hair cut, she'd buy me a comic book.
Shout out to Jesse's grandma.
Ah, she's the best.
She's pretty awesome.
She thought I was Nick last time I met her, but that's okay. we're both white.
She could probably beat up both our moms, let's be real.
Probably, with a chunkla. Anyway.
What?
Chocolate.
Sandal.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Yeah. And then I had watched the Spider-Man animated show, so I decided, well, you know, I'm at the comic book store or the bookstore. Let me check out a Spider-Man comic. And I was like, man, this guy's life really sucks. Like, you know, you expect comic books to be about heroes and about people that are bigger than life. And then here is this character that doesn't have a job, or if he does have a job, it's really shitty. His girlfriend sometimes is there, sometimes not. And I was like, oh, I thought heroes were supposed to be the best thing in the world. Oh, he's showing off his Ed Boon picture.
That is actually Nick with Ed Boon.
Yes, it is.
Creator of Mortal Kombat.
Co-creator of Mortal Kombat. Voice of Scorpion.
He was actually really nice. We sat and talked about like 10 minutes, honestly, at manager's conference.
Best 10 minutes of his life.
He's a very giving
of
person.
Ed Boon's life, yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a great time. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
So, you know, at the time, a lot of it was the art. Dan Slott was doing a lot of art for Spider-Man at the time.
Early 2000s artwork is very phenomenal.
Very exaggerated.
Yes, rounded edges and...
Boobies and muscles.
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
Honestly,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Spider-Man had a very unique look to it.
Yeah, he was always in these very acrobatic poses. I mean, very larger than life. You felt the motion in the Spider-Man comics at the time. And I really think that comic books in general are probably the most influential form of media of all time. It's literally taken over the movie industry. It's bled into the gaming industry. There's so many
TV.
Most of the blockbusters nowadays, they're of comic books.
I mean, it created superheroes.
Right. Movies are the new Western.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that definitely. But like you said, you know, comic books started all this, but it created superheroes, these, like you said, larger than life characters who people relied on and looked up to help save them and create a better world.
It's our mythology. Yeah, it's our
grit. Right. I was going to say it's the American Paul Bunyan, Henry Irons. Mm-hmm. It's the Billy the Kid. That's you're absolutely right, Jesse. That's our mythology.
Yeah. I think Marvel's kind of that way, and DC's very much the Greek gods. I mean, like Superman, yes. Green Lantern, yeah. Wonder Woman. They're all these. I mean, literally, some of them are Greek gods.
Yeah.
I think it's cool how we've caught up. Like when comic books first started, you know, Superman can do all
in
these
the 30s.
Things, and the movies were like, yeah, we can kind of show that. And you know, like Superman in the 80s started good. It got pretty.
What do you mean, that
movie,
original Superman
Richard
movie
Donner,
is
it's
what
amazing.
All other super,
yeah.
You know, it's what all other comic movies are compared to.
I'm not saying
the special effects and everything.
Oh, sure.
You have to go. Well, okay.
But Christopher Reeves is the prototype for a superhero actor.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
I don't like
Superman at all, and I think the Richard Donner Superman movie, the first Superman movie,
the very
is
first
enjoyable.
One, yeah.
I really like it. And I think it all breaks down to, you know, your character tropes, how you write them, and I think the limitations of us not being able to show him, you know, lift a building.
That's what I'm saying, is now we're in this generation where we can have the Marvel movies where fucking Hulk can do the shit that Hulk can do.
True.
And it looks right.
Well, and it's funny, though, because as far as all those have come, like, I feel like the most talked about movies are the grounded ones, right? Like, okay, yes, that character can lift a building, but, like, how do they feel about that, and how do they feel mm-hmm. being alienated from society?
And I think the cool thing about comics is that's always been the theme of a comic book, is mm-hmm. to mirror real world life and what that means. The X-Men were the best.
They're a foil.
The poster child for alienated people that were discriminated against. And I think a lot of people were able to relate to them because that happens in every form of life. And so X-Men was like the third pillar of comic books, I think, that I really followed because I, you know, felt that through these characters. Because to be honest, I lived in somewhat of a more privileged life here in Kansas, but I was able to see through these eyes of these fake people what it's like to be discriminated against. And then when you see that in real life, I was able to relate it to, oh, you know, that's bad. That's like the X-Men. They had to live through these awful things, and that happens in real life. So they weren't meant for kids, but I think it taught kids lessons early on that maybe they didn't get from Barney or, you know, these other kid-friendly shows.
Or their parents.
Or their parents.
Or their parents were too afraid to tell them.
Mainly their parents.
Right, exactly. And the comic industry has changed immensely in the last 20 years. Marvel, before Iron Man, was almost out of business entirely. They almost didn't exist until they made a movie, Iron Man, and it propelled them to the next level of pop culture.
And think about that, because they had Blade, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and X-Men all before Iron Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, X-Men and Spider-Man, I say, are the archetype for the group and the solo, you know, superhero movie.
And not to say that we wouldn't have had superhero movies, but Marvel as a comic book company would have been gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Somebody like Universal might have still had the rights to Marvel, possibly at that point. You know, we would have had our subpar comic book movies that we had in the past.
And it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but oversaturation.
Of comic books?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, they didn't, they were still sticking with the old tried and true white American hero, honestly, for the most part.
Right.
And it wasn't until after, you know, their MCU started, did they venture into newer types of heroes. That's where you get the new Miss Marvel, which is in...
Kamala Khan.
Yeah, which is, I believe she's Pakistani.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pakistani-American superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have never happened in the 60s or 70s.
No, not even close.
So it's good to see these advancements in female hero archetypes and other culture archetypes as well. Because you look at Shang-Chi, which is coming out, the new movie's coming
Shang-Chi.
Out. Shang-Chi. It is Shang.
Oh, it is?
It is Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Shang-Chi. Okay. Yeah, yep. I looked that up too, actually. That
Well,
that
white
same
people
night.
Will call it Shang-Chi.
Kevin Feige, the Lord himself, has said that it's Kevin. It's
and he
Shang-Chi.
Also publicly apologized for Mandarin.
He did.
Which, by the way, if you look back at the original Iron Man movie, the bad guys were people from Afghanistan. So it was of its time.
It was yes, of its was. Time, yes.
But they're coming out with a Asian-led comic book movie. Yes, he did lead his own comic book, but it was super stereotypical back in the day. I mean, mm-hmm. It was just, you know, the...
It was the old Asian wise man on the hill.
The Fu Manchu mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But comic books, to me, a lot of people that read them now don't like the mainstream stuff. They don't really like Marvel. They don't really like DC. The indie world is becoming the new, like, thing. That's why Invincible... has been so big because it's an indie comic.
The Boys. Umbrella Academy.
Sweet Tooth. There's
Preacher.
Preacher was a big one.
Preacher's so fucking good.
And it is, there's a place for it. There's tons of indie comics that I really love, and they bring new things to the table. Walking Dead was an indie comic at one point. Yep.
Did you ever hear about how he sold that?
No. Tell me about it.
It's gonna be zombies, and they were like, no. No, we're not doing a fucking zombie graphic novel. And he was like, but then aliens come. And they were like, oh, okay, aliens. And then he like made the whole first graphic novel. I don't remember how far they got into it. Yeah. And they were like, you said it was going to be aliens? And he was like, no, it was going to be zombies the whole time. And they were like, well, shit, this is good, though. Okay, keep going.
As much as the show has really gone on way too long, the comic did do something for the comic world. And that's give you an uncertainty on which characters are going to make it to the next issue, because you read Spider-Man, you read Batman, you know who's going to live. I mean, they're not going to kill Jim Gordon. They're not going to kill these characters.
Well, they might, but they'll just come back.
Walking Dead also gave you a look into human nature,
right?
Human violence. You know, like what would really happen in an apocalypse. It wasn't just like bad guy versus good guy, or good guy versus, you know, our hero versus villain. It was like the will to survive between humans and what they would do in those situations. So it was kind of crazy at the time.
And zombies have, I mean, since George Romero, always been kind of a, an analogy for just society as a whole, and, you know, the sheeple versus, you know, everyone else.
Robert Kirkman is a brilliant comic book creator.
And X-Men, you know, as much as zombies are about society as a whole, X-Men, you know, and the being the impoverished and the
persecuted.
The persecuted and the unaccounted for. You know, God loves, man kills is
great storyline.
A great storyline adapted into X-Men X2, you know, is a great example of that.
I remember when Superman died. That was fucking...
That was massive. And then he came right back, and that almost killed comics.
Yeah. But, like, when it happened, like, I had the book.
Yeah.
It was the first, I think, well, aside from Crisis on Infinite Earths, it was one of the biggest events, I think, that ever was created
for comic
at that
books.
Time.
For comic books. In general.
Which, if you don't know, in the 90s, they killed Superman after, what is that, 50 years at that point of history. And people were freaking out. They were like, oh, you're killing Superman? That's a big deal. You find out 6 issues later that he went into a coma, a healing coma, and comes back. And that almost, destroyed the comic industry. Because now you're like, oh, okay, we can bring anyone back. And that's been the trope since then.
It is 100%
the reason why, you know, that comic came out in a special black plastic sealed issue, and even if you have it still sealed, that comic goes for like $15.
I can't even say that there's like, I used to say there's two deaths that will always remain, and I can't even say that anymore.
It's everyone stays, or everyone comes back except for Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben even came back. He came back in Spider-Verse. So it's created a problem, yes. But overall, the events are what drive, I think, comic books a lot nowadays. There are things that people look for. King in Black is what the newest event in Marvel is at this moment.
Completely took over comics.
Exactly. And that could definitely tie into the MCU. This is
what is the King in Black?
He is the first entity of darkness. And he is what created the symbiotes. And he is directly linked to the newest Thor villain for the new movie. Sure. So there's lots of speculation right now that he's going to make his way into Venom, possibly.
His name is Null.
He is
the King of Darkness.
He's cool. You would like him.
Sounds pretty rad, bro.
Anything that has to do with darkness and evil, Chris is all about.
He's absolute zero. He's like the darkness in the universe. He's like the first evil god.
Sweet.
It's him and Galactus. Like, it's like he's ultimate, bigger than Galactus. Yeah, all the Celestials, all the World Enders, he's bigger than all of them.
Fucking totally.
It took every known Marvel character ever to face him.
What's been going on recently in the comic book industry is that they've been finding ways to rewrite or undo mistakes, I think, in the original lore of characters. And so they found a way to weave him into like this comic that came out in the 70s. They were like, hey, that thing that's in panel 5, that's actually Null now. And you're like, what the fuck? That's
so what happens to the price of that comic?
Now that comic, which anything right now in collectible state is going way up in price, but that one comic alone probably tripled in value just because now that character is linked to Null.
So I feel like that's kind of where this is leading for you, Jesse, but it's, I mean, you kind of have your finger at the pulse of comic financing right now.
So I got out of comics around 20. I was reading a lot in high school. I almost got a job at our local comic shop because I loved comics so much. But I got out of comics right before I went into college. So 2009, 2010. And I dabbled. You know, we had hung out at Gamers HQ and Boom Comics. Boom Comics.
Maybe one day we'll tell the tale. But
Boom Comics opened up directly next to Gamers HQ, and it was a match made in nerd heaven.
Yep. Shout out to Gamers HQ, our sponsor. Love you guys.
You had video games. And thanks, then man. For me, you had comic books and board games. Like, man, I don't know how I managed to get married, because that shit's the fucking lowest of nerd you can get. But
I can easily
you met her before, true, kind of before that. So
I can easily say like 2/3 of my paychecks used to just go to 21st Engage.
So I dabbled. I bought a couple things, and he was like, hey, this new character's coming out. You might want to pick it up, which I was happy for. So I picked up a couple comics, but I wasn't really reading. Several years go by, like 2013 to 2020. I'm not reading anything. I'm reading graphic novels. I bought a couple apps, like the DC app, the Marvel app, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I can kind of catch up. Then this little app comes out called Key Collector Comics, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I can catalog my comics.
How recent is this?
Last year.
This is like March of 2020.
Yep.
So I download it. I'm like, I'm going to catalog my comics because I have maybe 100 issues. I sold a bunch of them in between then, and I didn't have much, but I was like, I'm going to look at these up. Here we are. First, Riri Williams, who is a new character that's going to take on the Iron Man moniker, is like a $90 comic. I spent $4 on that shit. So I'm like, Dakota, hey, this thing tripled and like quadrupled.
Jesse calls me at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I was freaking out. I'm looking through the Spider-Verse movie came out. Enter the Spider-Verse came out. Gwen Stacy, who has been a known dead character in comic books for years, got a big role in that movie.
Yep.
She becomes Spider-Woman, who becomes Spider-Gwen, who becomes Ghost Spider. That one issue that she appears in is a $700 comic.
Do you have that issue?
I have that issue.
And he has it graded.
So yes. Look, and signed. So I need some help.
He has graded and signed.
The three pillars of Jesse and I's friendship when we first became friends, because for those that don't know, I worked with Jess. I was someone that worked next to Jesse's roommate at the time. I worked for Pepsi, his roommate Dustin works for Dr. Pepper. One time Dustin asked me to hang out. He never showed up, so Jesse and I started, like, it was just us.
Never showed up at his house. Three How pillars... do you not show up at your house?
Right, right. The three pillars of our friendship was Pokemon, Under Oath, and comics. And so it was like back in 2015, I was like, hey, this Riri Williams, like, she might become something. Back in 2015, so Jesse picks it up, I pick it up. And so now I'm getting a phone call from Jesse at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, that comic's worth a lot of money right now. And then it just became, he's like, if you have these, so I'm on speakerphone with Jesse for like an hour, so it's till 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're pulling comics from our boxes, and he's like, We're gonna be rich, Dakota.
I'm gonna keep these till they're thousands of dollars.
He's so deep into it. I bought a comic years ago for Planet Comic Con for Stan Lee to sign, and it's the it's the first appearance of Dark Phoenix and X-Men.
Just a little tiny baby comic.
I remember when I bought it.
There's only two movies based around it.
It was when I bought it, it was like $100, and Jesse was over at my place a few months ago. And he was on his app because he was looking at it because it's framed and everything, signed by Stan Lee. And he looks at me, he's like,
R.I.P.
Hey, you know what you got on your wall there? I was like, yeah, it's a comic book. He's like, you know what, how much money you got on your wall there, right? I was like, no. How much is it right now, Jesse?
Dude, between the two comics you have on your wall, it's probably $3,000. Because you have that fucking signed by Stan Lee, first of all. And then you have a Spider-Man comic sitting there that's like easily... a $200 comic right there.
So there was, I would say there's a renaissance right now of comics from 2012 to 2016.
Because of the MCU.
Yeah.
So now the
MCU.
The thing that's...
And Star Wars.
Yes. The thing that's different about comic books versus movies is comic books, you can draw this character as young as you want them forever. But actors age, right?
Obviously, yeah.
Look at Robert Downey Jr. He started in his late 30s, I think, as Iron Man. And now he's past 50. He can't play Iron Man anymore. So what do you do if you want a continued universe? You have to look at what did the comics do
exactly
after Iron Man?
Yes.
Well, guess what? There's this character called Iron Lad, and there's War Machine, and there's all these other people that can take the mantle. Those characters weren't introduced until past the year 2000. So avid comic book fans were buying them, but at the time Marvel wasn't printing a lot of those issues. Nobody was reading comics except for the avid fans.
And Marvel did something that they had no idea that they were doing, the Ultimate Universe.
There's nothing that touches it.
The Ultimate Universe is the literal retelling of all of Marvel, and it became so big and so crazy that Marvel was not able to contain it anymore, so they destroyed it. And the only character to survive is a little guy called Miles Morales, who is the next coming of Peter Parker. So the back in the day, Miles Morales was just a character, but now he is the Peter Parker.
He's the quintessential Spider-Man, basically.
And,
yeah.
And he represents a lot of things that weren't represented in comics. He's a Black Hispanic, impoverished.
His dad's
hero.
A police officer.
Yep. Yeah.
His mother is Hispanic.
And a nurse.
It's the representation of the new American, in 2021.
Is he hetero or is he gay?
He was only gay, I believe, in one storyline, and it wasn't the main storyline.
He's bisexual.
Okay.
Right?
I don't think he is. He has a thing for Gwen Stacy in the current comics. I don't know if they've ever explicitly said he's bisexual.
Was he gay?
In one comic, he was.
In the new iteration of this, no, she's not. She's just as old as he is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because she's from an alternate timeline universe.
Different,
how comics work.
Different Gwen Stacy.
But, Black Spider-Man is... To Marvel at the time, it was... We're gonna try this out. But to again, X-Men, to the impoverished, to the unrepresented,
and to a completely new generation is Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
He is Spider-Man
in the
movies.
He's super
likable. Spider-Man.
Go ahead.
The Spider-Verse movie, I'm not as big into comics. I mean, I like comics. I've read comics. I've kind of gotten into them. Jesse and Dakota have kept me updated on this stuff. Into the Spider-Verse. My God, one of the best Spider-Man movies,
one of the best comic book movies in general.
Like,
do you know
amazing.
What they were working on when they got fired? They were working on Solo, a Star Wars story, and they were let go, and so they're like,
dummies.
Okay, well, there's this other project we want to work on, so they made Into the Spider-Verse.
should have kept them for Solo, but I'm glad they did.
I talk a lot about Marvel because, honestly, because of the movies, I think they've done a really good job of taking those storylines and those characters and updating them. My ultimate love is with Batman. I mean, sure. I will always love the Batman universe, but DC doesn't know how to make a universe.
They don't know what the fuck they're doing overall. I think they stopped trying.
Are you talking about movies or comics?
Movies.
So, not to hijack, you know, your love, but you know, Tower of Babel is what Teen Titans is what got me into comics.
Teen Titans, the show and the you're talking about the cartoon show?
Yeah. Well, no, the comic Tower of Babel. It was, you know, it was Superboy Prime and Superboy and, you know, the quintessential Teen Titans that we know now. And it's a lot of what the comic was, the Cartoon Network cartoon was based off of. And, you know, if you're in your 20s, you watched Teen Titans growing up. You watched Justice League, you watched Teen Titans. And to read that storyline and to see, you know, what those characters did, that's what got me into comics. And so for me, I've always felt that although Marvel's had the relatable characters, I've always felt like the larger-than-life stories, the well-done stories, have been from DC. So, you know, the Green Lantern Wars, you know, your Long Halloween, your Hush, your Superboy Prime. So that's what got me into comics, was DC storylines.
Yeah, absolutely. Batman, in general, has always been a detective, right? That's what Ra's al Ghul calls him. He's always been that kind of character.
Detective Comics.
Exactly. And that's what always drew me to Batman, is that it wasn't always about the fight. It was about figuring out the mystery. And you don't get a lot of mystery, I think, in Marvel. You get a lot more of theatrics. You get a lot more of combat and fighting. And that's kind of the biggest difference in why Batman, to this day, still gravitates me towards those storylines. But there's something to be said about both of Marvel and DC as a fan of those that I enjoy more than the indies. And that's that being a good person doesn't stop after you're a good person.
Absolutely not.
You have to continue to be the best person you can
when no one's watching.
Exactly.
And that's what I get out of the Marvel and DC comics. You know, you get these characters that make mistakes and try to be the best person they can be. And I read some of these comics and I'm like, damn,
relate to them.
I can relate to them. Yep. There's times where in my life where I'm just skating by and it's like, I don't need to skate by. I need to do my best. I need to be the, you know, the best person I can be. And so that's why I still...
Yeah, Nick.
Wow, okay.
And that's why
Fix your life.
Yeah, seriously.
That's why I still really like the main two big ones, because I think they still do that very well.
Spider-Man and Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, the two pillars of Marvel and DC.
Yeah, they fail. Yep. They find a way to come back. I think Spider-Man exemplifies that a little better than Batman. I think sometimes Batman, they get really into the, he's Batman and he does what he wants. But Spider-Man, they always make a point to say,
he's a kid from the Bronx.
You fucked up, dude. How are you going to fix this? And so that's...
Or from Queens, I'm sorry.
He's Queens, from Queens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the things that attracted me to comic books, aside from the art, obviously the art, which, you know, a lot of love doesn't go to the inkers and, you know, those other people that make that happen, the editors, which put these panels together in a certain way.
Actually, saying something about that, paneling is a lot more important than I think people give credit for, especially in like manga, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, paneling goes a long way in keeping you interested in the flow of what's happening in the story.
Yeah.
Especially fight scenes, you know, like you said, the inker or the artists or whatever. Paneling is just as important. It seems weird to say that, but go and read a comic that's just like square panel, square panel, square panel, square panel, if you can find one. And it's boring. You get bored. You're like, oh, it's the same thing over and over again. Find a comic that has different iterations of how panels link together, like long panels, or they have panels.
The double page is fucking beautiful.
Yes, double pages are great. It goes a long way.
Split down the middle.
Right. Yeah.
It's beautiful, and it really keeps you interested in what's going on, because it really does make flow to it.
Like, if you get lost in a comic, that's a bad editor.
Yep.
You know, like, if you're like, okay, what? Why did he say that? Oh, I have to go back and read this guy's what he said. That's a bad editor. You should be able to know where you're supposed to look and get the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and comics are such a voice for the voiceless. I mean...
Absolutely.
You know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and what those guys did, I mean, you know... One of the most one of the biggest resurgences is Black Panther, and that's created by a couple of Jewish guys. You know, Superman created by a couple of Jewish guys. It's the voice of the voiceless X-Men. You know, and you know, the people who have done those movies. You know, people that were you know, gay in the industry when it wasn't okay to be gay in the industry, and it's just being able to represent people that aren't represented. And comics have always been the one outlet that people have had, you know, when they weren't allowed in music or TV or movies. So that's one of my favorite things is, you know, at any point in comics, whether it be manga or comics, you manga can find someone that wasn't, you know, wasn't represented. So, and that's such a powerful thing. And then, you know, now in this resurgence of African-American writers and, you know, and Static Shock is getting a new shot.
So excited for that.
And again, if you grew up with Teen Titans and if you grew up with Justice League, you grew up with Static Shock and you grew up with Phil Lamar's voice. And yeah. it's such a powerful time for the non-white, you know, representation of comics. And it's such a beautiful thing.
There's going to be a Black Superman movie.
Michael B. Jordan?
With Michael B. Jordan.
Hell yeah.
And it's not a made-up character. It's someone that's been around. It's just like, you know, with Wonder Woman and having, is her name?
Nubia.
You know, it's these are established things. Black Manta, Black Adam. You know, these aren't new ideas. These are things that have been around for over 50 years. Black Adam, one of my favorite comic book characters of all time. And it's like you've waited half a century to finally get your representation in larger media.
Give kudos to Blade, because Blade is one of the first
superhero
Black
led. We would not have superheroes anything without Blade.
Blade does not
fucking
get
Wesley
credit.
Snipes. Credit to you.
I know,
man.
You
I
like
mean,
Blade, Chris.
I fucking love Blade,
dude,
bro.
My dad was like, all right, like 4 or 5 year old Dakota was like, alrighty, we're gonna watch Blade.
Yeah,
like, let me just serenade you real quick.
Okay.
Boom, whack, boom, whack, boom, whack, boom,
you're talking about the
very first scene. The very yes.
One of,
Blood Rave was awesome.
One of the greatest action opening movie scenes of all time is the nightclub.
The first great comic book movie,
yep.
Except for Batman, I would say, because what do you have before that? The Avengers movie. Have you seen that? Fucking awful.
The Hulk show.
It was like, I like the Hulk show.
It went like Hulk TV show, and then it went like
Wonder Woman
the
TV
Crow
show
and Blade. Yes, Wonder
the
Woman
Crow.
TV show.
The Crow
and then Crow and Blade.
Wasn't
okay,
it?
The Crow gets some love.
Yeah, Crow
and
gets
that
love.
Was by an Asian American actor.
That's true.
Oh, we're fine. We're at 38 minutes.
What's
dude?
Who's your favorite comic book? Do you have a comic that
Chris,
you read
do you,
that you really
my
like?
Favorite comic book character, Carnage.
I love
fuck
Carnage.
Yeah. And
Carnage
he's finally
fucking
so
coming in
30 years later. He's getting a representation.
Woody
he came out
fucking
yeah,
Harrelson?
1992. Same yeah. year I was born.
Woody Harrelson, baby.
That's that Chris. I think
perfect
that
casting.
I think that has to deal with what you were talking about as technology is catching up now, because
yeah.
How do you represent, you know, truly represent Venom.
Same
don't talk
do.
About Spider-Man 3. yeah. Truly represent Venom and Carnage until you have the technology to be able to.
They tried Spawn.
Here's what you don't.
Spawn was
bro,
Spawn
I grew
was
up
pretty
that
good.
Movie.
Michael
Chai White.
Spawn was pretty good at
Jai.
The time.
Michael Chai White. Sorry, Jay.
Spawn
Jai.
Was pretty good at the time.
okay.
At
okay.
the time,
Spawn
it's fun.
Wasn't great.
At the time, it was great. At
Michael
the time,
Chai White was great.
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo
as the
great.
Eviscerator.
Yep.
The rest of that movie.
Garbage.
Pretty rough.
Yeah. But Carnage is sweet.
It had Vivica A. Fox in it.
Let me just say, just don't. You don't need to show me the dude under the mask all the time. You do not need to show me the dude under the stop it.
Do you mean
stop
when
it.
They remove it so they can talk?
Yes.
Hey, Parker.
Stop it. We know who yeah. they fucking are.
Hey,
we
Parker.
Get it. Every fucking movie is so I'm sorry. We
that's because the actor wants to be known for their role.
No.
He's covered
not all
in
the
latex
time.
Anyway.
Not all the time. A lot of the time, it's the fucking the people that are like, you're going to have to do reshoots. We need to see his face.
I think you're going to get what you want in this new movie
yep.
for Carnage.
It's directed by Andy Serkis, so it'll be interesting.
Andy Serkis directing.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get what we want.
Before.
Well, yeah, I know he has, but I mean, I hope it's good.
It will be.
What else did he direct?
He directed that Jungle Book movie
yeah.
that actually is really good, I hear.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Not oh, the one with Scarlett Johansson and...
Yeah.
No,
that's the
no, that's the Disney
no.
one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're right.
Scarlett Johansson.
Which one? Wait, which
and,
Jungle Book? So there's the Jungle Book, and then there's a Mowgli movie that came out like a year
oh,
later.
Oh, yes, Mowgli.
And I haven't watched it yet, but I hear it's really good.
Okay. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can beat What's-His-Name as the title.
So what's your favorite comic? Carnage.
Carnage.
Nick?
Comic book character?
Yeah. Or was that your question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also might have to be Batman for me. Because it was kind of the same thing when I was young. I read a few Batman comics because I saw the Tim Burton Batman movies when I was really young. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And my mom was like, this is a comic book, you know? And I bought a few. And it was
a hot take. Talk about someone living in their own shadow. Anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, I that's kind of what started me in that path as well.
Yeah.
Batman obviously has influenced my life for many, many years. Spider-Man equally, I would say. If I'm talking
the two like
pillars,
morally
of each.
Good, yes, yeah. And they are the mirrors of each other as far as the staples of DC and Marvel.
As I got older, I grew into really liking Punisher, which is a little problematic looking back onto him. And my favorite DC character at this point now, aside from Batman, is Jason Todd, Red Hood. But I could go on. There's so many great characters from, you know, Marvel, DC, even indie properties. There's so many amazing characters. Spawn is a really great character, too.
If it was not Carnage, I would say Spawn.
I'm surprised you didn't say Spawn.
Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. And not the only reason, but one of the big reasons for me is because of the Spawn HBO show. Because that did.
Dude, that was
David
great.
Punches.
My God,
Keith
that
Davids?
Was really
yeah.
good.
Keith David is
Davids.
Spawn.
I've never seen it.
It's, what?
You
it's
need,
brilliant. I own it.
You need to watch it. It's,
watch it.
It's great.
It's brilliant.
Keith David is fucking Spawn.
Keith David is awesome, just in general,
and we're
with everything
about
he does.
Movies and shows. God damn, we're not supposed
well,
to.
Well, a comic book related.
It bleeds in.
What who's your favorite?
So, you know,
Black Adam.
Not,
Black Adam, yeah.
Not my yeah. Not my first experience, but, you know, I grew up in Topeka where, you know, a semi-professional hockey team, the Scarecrows, and they would give out comics to kids when you went to them. So, you know, I grew up with like Kyle Rayner of Green Lantern and Flash, Wally West, you know.
Flash.
So I don't talk about it as much, but, you know, if not for who I'm going to say, I feel like Wally West would be one of my favorites. He is the quintessential Flash of millennials.
Which is great because he's not even the second Flash. He's the third.
No. Third.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you've got Scott Allen. You got
Barry
Scott
Allen.
Allen. Sorry.
Barry
Scott.
Allen.
Not Scott. Allen Scott?
Yeah.
Something Scott.
Yeah.
And then you've got Barry Allen and then you have Wally West. So just, but he was my Flash. But. No, I read
Wally West was Flash for the longest, though, right? After
Barry
Allen?
After Barry Allen,
Barry
yes.
Allen's
after
been Barry. Long. But Barry Allen's not very likable. Anyway, that's another another topic. So.
Wasn't. He?
So,
they've
he
changed
him
since
him
the show.
Like
since
Wally.
The show.
So, reading Tower of Babel, it ends with a couple characters being harnessed for their energy, and one of them being this character in black who, after being released, another character, Psycho Pirate,
what a great name.
He made fun of him for having a receding hairline. So this character took two fingers and pushed the front of this character's face through the back of his head. And I was like, I think I like comics. And it was Black Adam.
Yeah.
I mean, someone so willing to assert their dominance on someone else and then at the same time being the protector of an entire continent. You know, I've always had an affinity for the character willing to do what they need to protect their own people. So,
right.
You
and,
know,
and Black Adam didn't really necessarily start off as a hero.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, he's still not. But
how exciting it is for you that, again, a very prominent comic book character is just now getting a live action movie The Rock of
by Apple. The great like right. the biggest action star right now
right
like,
since
yeah.
the biggest action star since
Arnold
Schwarzenegger to he's had to campaign for a decade in order to get this role for such a prominent comic book character, like Jesse said. And for me, you know, just suburban white kid who's grown up loving a Egyptian god, basically, you know, so it's a long time coming. So for me, it's, you know, the Rock and the character Black Adam gets everything he's deserved, you know, and Shazam, you know, is a part of that. And in order for one of two characters to get a sequel out of this new DC universe. So it's a great time to be a Shazam Black Adam fan.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. Last point on comics and we'll move on. The Rock, decided that he didn't want his original costume. Most comic movies, they pad the costumes to make them look muscular. He said, no. I want to actually look like the comic book character. So if you look at his Instagram right now, he's the best shape he's ever been. He looks like Black Adam.
And he's what, like 50?
52?
He's taken the most steroids he's probably ever taken. No.
He's scary looking.
No, that's genetics, 52. My guy.
He's 52.
That's steroids, my
guy. I mean, The Rock for a long time has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, but
he's huge.
He has gotten to the point now where he has paid attention to every muscle group in the body, every fiber of his body, and it has chiseled it to a point of where he legit looks like a Greek god superhero.
This will be the most accurate,
hardest working actor in Hollywood.
Yeah, the most accurate we've ever been to a real life superhero.
Yep.
We'll see.
And, you know, I have to attribute that to The Rock, and shout out to part one of this to wrestling, but The Rock has given. There wouldn't be no Black Adam movie without The Rock. You know
probably
what I mean?
Right.
There's no, and you know, if
there's
not,
no Scorpion King without The Rock.
The best superhero movie.
No, but there's no Crow movie without Brandon Lee. There's certain times in history, in cinematic history, where it takes the right person at the right time.
No Deadpool without Ryan Reynolds.
There's definitely three more Crow movies without Brandon Lee.
But it wouldn't have been unless...
No, I know. I'm just saying they got way worse. Have you seen the fourth Crow movie?
I've only seen the first one.
I've seen the third one and the first one.
I've seen the first one in the TV show.
Do you know who's in the fourth Crow movie?
Yes. Yes.
David Boreanaz?
Nope.
Nope.
Well, yes.
In the fourth
one? He's in that one.
Who? Tara Reid, David Boreanaz is in the fourth one.
Guess who's the Crow?
Guess who's the Crow?
The kid from Terminator.
John Connor.
Eddie Furlong.
And he's so bad.
He's Native American also, isn't he?
Somehow he's part Native American with all these people that are much more brown. I don't know how else to say that.
Chris, I don't know how to tell
Tara
you
Tara Reid is
Chris,
browner than Eddie Furlong.
Chris, the guy from Iron Chef that introduces the ingredients plays the Crow in the TV show.
And he's awesome.
He is
today's ingredient.
He's also on John Wick.
You don't understand. Before he was
that was a pretty cool fight, wasn't it?
Before he was on Iron Chef, he was in Only the Strong, where
he was
the
martial
power
arts
of capoeira.
Yeah, he was a martial arts
dance
fighter.
Fighting to win.
Well, that's all the time we have to talk about comics today. We appreciate all you listeners out there. This is the Digital Bath Podcast, signing out.